Now, let me invite our commentators, Shannon, Naida, and Annika, to come forward and take a seat, or your seats. And I find this being a very attractive topic because the room is overfull. Next time, maybe we should hire the auditorium. Anyway, I will ask our commentators, so I will give you 10 minutes each to commentate upon the findings and the questions you may have to authors, and then we will open up also for a general discussion. And if I start with Shannon Kidorny, you're an adjunct research professor at the Norman Patterson School of International Affairs at Carleton University. I think that is in Canada.
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yes. And you've also been working for the North-South Institute, which I know also is Canada-based. So please give us your overall impression, and you're also related to DAC, I understand, to the OECD DAC in the sense that, So what do we learn from this work that Ari, Hanna, and Sara has been undertaking?
Great. So thank you, of course, to EBA for the kind invitation to comment on this excellent report. I've been asked to speak from the perspective of, how does this report relate to what's happening, for other DAC members or more broadly in international development cooperation, particularly with respect to working with and through the private sector. And this relates, you'll hear more about it later today, but this relates to a DAC member learning process that we're actually currently undergoing, looking at how different members are working with and through the private sector. So I think I'll just pick up on a couple of the kind of key findings and some of the themes that are raised by the report, and maybe relate that back to, how the broader context I think that DAC members find themselves in. The first, I think, is around the mapping question, that your small print. I think that this is there's no question that the challenge for a lot of DAC members is around actually capturing these flows. You have the challenge where, in the context of Sweden, for example, where you've integrated your private sector collaboration across sectors. For other donors, it's much more in the private sector development sphere, and then with other activities in health or education. But the reality is that the systems are not necessarily structured with markers or tools to effectively capture those partnerships and give us that broad overview. And so I think that issue you've identified is very much a shared challenge. And I think related to that is also sort of this question around how we capture these sort of intangible forms of cooperation. So policy dialogue, for example, processes where you're engaging with the private sector around new standards or voluntary frameworks. How is that actually captured by our systems? And in theory, those types of engagements have huge potential for very long-term term impact, but may not actually be captured at all by the current systems that we have, especially when there's no disbursement actually related to those activities. So I think that's a challenge around the flows that is very much shared. I think the other issue is around, you flagged that these are sort of modest contributions vis-a-vis the overall development budget. And I actually think the reality is probably that that's the case for a lot of partners, a lot of DAC members, and that there's a lot more talk and that the action is coming and we're seeing a growth in this field. But I actually think that's close to reality for a lot of the other DAC members who are looking to expand their portfolios, but maybe haven't quite gotten there yet. I think it's also important for us to really emphasize and recognize the push and pull factors that exist for this kind of cooperation. And so, I think that there's been a lot of focus and discussions around finance and the use of money, aid money to support or sometimes subsidize activities with the private sector, at least it's termed in that way. But I think the reality is for many DAC members that at the end of the day, it's often more about their convening power, the knowledge and the expertise that they have on the ground in countries, the development expertise and so on. And so I think, I'm not convinced that finance is actually the biggest incentive for partnership for the private sector. And we hear this also from representatives in the private sector. But recognizing that that expertise, that convening role, that ability to ground, you know, civil society and private sector partnerships, that has huge value add. And I think that that also has huge potential when we think about development additionality. You know, there's a lot of conversation around, you know, would they have taken these undertaken activities anyway, right? That's the financial piece. And can we really prove that they couldn't find finance otherwise? That's a really important part of the discussion, and it needs to be an important part of the discussion. But I think we also need to be nuanced in our understanding that even if a private sector partner would have undertaken the activity, it might not have had the same positive impacts. And that's where we need to think about development additionality, and I think nuance the way that we talk about that a bit more. And then I think on the push side, the push for sort of better behavior or better kind of inclusive business models, a greater attention to corporate social responsibility. You know, the Drivers of Change program is an example of that, you know, supporting civil society to play its watchdog role. And I think that that's a really important aspect of, you know, how DAC members are engaging the private sector. And I wouldn't say that all members have really gotten to that piece. You see a lot of kind of actual concrete partnerships, but the extent to which we are recognizing the need to support the catalytic role civil society plays in pushing the private sector and the laggards forward on this agenda, I'm not sure that that's as shared across the DAC membership. And I think we also need to, and I understand the constraints in the study, and you know, you focused very much on Swedfund and CETA, and that's fine. But I think we also need to recognize that in some sort of broader discussions, you know, you have members that are bringing in their trade, the trade side, for example, where you have, you know, trade missions that are considering the sustainability aspects in negotiations, other sort of mechanisms within government that engage the private sector and can push this the sustainability agenda. And so I think that really gets to that policy coherence for development piece. And I think that that's an important tool, I think, in the toolbox for how we think about engaging the private sector in development. I don't think it is just the role of the aid agency to be the leader in that regard. I think the other, maybe just to, I'll pick up on the question of aid effectiveness. In the report, you make a point of looking at, you know, from the donor perspective, that, you know, development as the overarching objective and not being concerned about so much the commercial side. I think that we kind of make the joke that Sweden might be the island amongst the DAC members, in the sense that most of them are facing this challenge where actually they do have to worry about the commercial interests. And it is about promoting their own sort of mutual benefit. And that's a reality that a lot of agencies and ministries are struggling with right now, is how do I continue to be an effective development actor, you know, abide by these good development practices, these principles that we've all agreed to, and at the same time support my own private sector. And I think that's very much the reality for a lot of countries that are engaging in this space. And I think there's some real implications for what that means around aid effectiveness in country. So you think about harmonization, for example, and the way that donors are working together at the country level. Well, now you're sitting around a table where you've got one partner saying, you know, poverty reduction is our main goal, and if we can work with the private sector, that's great. And then you have other partners saying, yes, but we need to bring in, you know, the Canadian business sector into this deal. So, I mean, that really undermines, to a certain extent, our ability to have aid effectiveness. And I'm not sure how we're going to get around that, because that's a political issue at the end of the day, but certainly one I think that we need to be mindful of when we think about aid effectiveness. And then finally, I just wanted to maybe talk a bit about results. I think that there's a number of elements to the challenge of how we report on results and how we think about results with the private sector. So one is that you have this significant variety of activities that are happening. So how do you aggregate up and then have a compelling narrative around private sector engagement? And you know, we see this a lot in the case of the private sector development sphere, so where you're enabling and building the private sector in a developing country, but you're bringing in the partnership angle. There aren't shared metrics per se. You know, there isn't a consistent reporting framework that we have. And so it becomes very challenging to go from that individual project to the program or the instrument and then to the overall impact and outcome level. And that's a challenge that a lot of countries are facing. And we've been hearing a lot about that issue. I think at the, and I think maybe just to end on, the point about, the need to better distill the lessons from working with the private sector, I think that 110%, I would agree. I think that's what the OECD DAC is on about right now in this peer learning exercise. So very much agree with you on that point.
Thanks a lot, Shannon. Now let me turn to Naida. You're at OECD,
yes,
working on climate change, environment and green growth, and an analyst on those issues. How do you relate this data and the findings from Ari and Sarah and Hannah to your work on environment, climate, etc.? Please, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. thank you for giving me the opportunity to comment on the report. It's really nice, really comprehensive, nice round look at one country which I think we can also do for the DAC, across the board at the DAC, at DAC members. From the environment perspective, we all know what the major challenge is. In 2 weeks' time, we're going to come together and decide on what we do about greenhouse gas emissions, and this is just one small part of the environment agenda. Crucially, I think it's for development cooperation, environment, and Sweden already acknowledges this, but across the board in DAC members, I would say, environment is a crucial and central pillar to development cooperation, without which there's no SDGs, there's no 850 million out of poverty, no nothing. So it's very important. And why do I make this point? Because I think private sector engagement overall is important, but for green, for environment, I think it's a place what we're seeing, it will need to play an increasingly more important role. At least that is the opinion that of some of us working on in this area. Because if you look at the overall numbers, they simply don't add up into the kind of investment we're going to have to put into achieving the SDGs, and then the little bit of additional for climate resilient, and then the amount of money we have right now, and then the relatively small role that the development corporation is playing. I think the report really nicely picks up on this changing landscape of development finance and the different players. For me, one aspect that we could add to that is this is where the money is, and this is how much it is, and this is the different role, and then the other side of the picture, how much we need, the gap. It's immense. It's what we have right now is still a drop in the bucket if you consider what we have to get. So development cooperation, environmental flows, climate finance, development cooperation that's climate-related, environment-related, has to increasingly be more catalytic. I think on the report itself, on the content of the report, so most of the stuff that Shannon has already picked up on is also relevant for environment, but some specifics. It's really encouraging to see that the JDIs that Sweden has done so far, both Swedfund and SIDA, are the ones that we've seen in the report. Some of them are, a decent amount of them are environment-related, and also different sectors. That's really nice to see. But as the report has picked up, it's still only a very small portion of what, at least what SIDA is doing, though a large portion of what Swedfund is doing. And I think that's pretty much the same across the board in other development partners. It's really difficult to have numbers on how much of climate finance or development, environment-related development finance is private sector-related, but it's small. But it may be a little bit bigger in some other countries. But so there is scope to increase it, I would say. Certainly, if we look at SIDA's environmental programs, and extensive work on building institutions, forestry ecosystems, private sector would probably factor as a really, really small part of it. But having said that, the instruments, at least from my perspective, from what I've seen in the report and a little bit on what Sweden is doing, are very suitable for, or could be, since we don't really have the results information, could be very suitable for environmental projects, particularly for sectors like forestry, ecosystems, biodiversity, instruments like PPDPs, where it's co-financing and not necessarily related to a big flow, sort of profit margin, I suspect. PPDPs could be a good instrument in those sectors which are not really private, so easily applicable to private financing. We've seen one guarantee project, which is a loan portfolio guarantee for energy efficiency, but certainly there could be more of that. Swed fund equity into more firms that, you know, develop energy efficiency technologies or that are doing renewables. So there is, I think, scope. One of the things that we will need to see increasingly is how these instruments are matching up in terms of their in terms of achieving the environmental objectives, and certainly not versus other forms of development cooperation, but within private sector instruments, which are more or less effective in terms of mobilizing money for reducing emissions or increasing resilience or increasing biodiversity or certainly emissions gives us a good way of measuring. But it will be interesting. It will be increasingly important to see which of these instruments work better, because certainly we would need to target. But we won't get there, I think, and Sweden may not get there without scaling up some of these pilots. So some of these initiatives are, especially the PPDPs, are very interesting, but still small. And the question is how can you scale it up? And I think the report nicely picks up on things like exit strategies and stuff, which is important actually from the scaling up perspective. So we will need to, because without scaling up and having more of these initiatives across your portfolio and also in terms of each of them growing, we won't get the evidence to see which is more or less effective. The one question that came to me generally looking at CEDA's work on environment and on private sector is how this private sector related engagement initiatives fit with the rest of this enormous portfolio of development cooperation work on environment. So the institution building, the policy frameworks for renewable energy, energy efficiency, the biodiversity and forestry projects, programs, building the environmental ministries in countries. So within that scope, how do these match? How do they fit? Is there a cohesive approach that on one hand, we're going to build the enabling condition and then we're going to target some of our private sector work in the places that we built enabling conditions? That's one question for me. And the other one was to look a little bit at how some of these pilots within themselves could be scaled up.
Thanks a lot, Naida, on that. Environmental aspects of the joint development initiatives and the challenges in connection with that. Now, finally, on our commentators, Annika Sundén, chief economist at CEDA, home base. Background at Swedish Pension Agency, also Federal Board of Reserve in Washington, D.C. And I guess you're still a member of another expert group on public affairs studies. So
that's right.
You're in the business. Now, what does this mean for growth and for Swedish ODA?
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation to comment on the paper. And thanks to Ari, Sara and Hannah for a very interesting report. I also want to start by relating this report to Agenda 2030. And to the SDGs, which is a very ambitious agenda. It's a universal agenda, and it sets the framework for inclusive and sustainable development for the next 15 years. It's also clear that we've already heard that if we're going to reach the goals, there's a need for much more resources. To estimate how much is, of course, difficult, but some estimates shows that it's something like 30 times annual global ODA. So it's a lot of money. It's also clear in this agenda that ODA will continue to be crucial. It will be crucial to fight poverty and to reach the goal, and in particular in countries, the poorest countries and countries affected by conflict, where few other sources of funding is available, as you show in the report. And Sweden is, of course, committed to the goals, the 0.7% of BNI, and currently we contribute 1%. But it's not going to be enough. And as the report also shows, we know that ODA is shrinking as a relative share of total flows to countries. So it's clear, I think, that we need to mobilize additional resources, but we also need to work together between different partners, between donors, business, civil society, and other actors. And if it's one thing that I think that stands out in this agenda, compared to the MDGs, it's really that it's a multi-stakeholder agenda and that everyone is needed to reach the development goals. There are, of course, many challenges, but I want to pick up on one, and that's also done in the report, and it's you know, if we're going to fight poverty and reach goal one, eradicate extreme poverty, the way to do that is clearly job creation. In sub-Saharan Africa, where most of Sweden's partner countries are, we have a young population. It's growing younger. Population growth is still high. We know there's going to be a youth bulge. Unemployment and underemployment is widespread. We really need a job-rich and inclusive growth. We need structural transformation and diversification of the economies. Currently, we do not see this happening. So having ways to think of a proactive industrial policy and cooperation with private industry is going to be needed to produce a different kind of growth in our partner countries. And here, I think it's clear that donor agencies have a role to play in mobilizing capital and getting projects off the ground. We know today that there are projects that are not started, or farmers don't get loans, or small companies don't get loans. There are market missings. So to continue then develop risk mitigation tools such as guarantees, but also other instruments as challenge funds, I think is going to be crucial in development cooperation. And working with business as an actor is included in CEDA's instruction from the government. And I also think that when we work with these instruments, they are really complements. We're looking at our overall toolbox. They should never be seen as a substitute. I think that's clear from the outset, and it's really a core principles. We need to look at all the different instruments, the grants, the guarantees, the challenge funds, and then, of course, look at what is the development result that we're going to achieve and which tool is best, is the most adequate to do that. The report does this, but I think we really have to underscore this over and over again. When we work together with business and with others, the goal for development cooperation is always combating poverty. And we also have to recognize that the case for business is something else. The case for business is always creating value for owners. But we also know that business increasingly have realized that including sustainability into their operations is going to be profitable. So there is really a common set of goals that we can exploit and take advantage to reach development results. And as been pointed out, we should not distort markets, we need to be additional, and we should not crowd out market initiatives. And sort of measuring and following up on this, like the report points out, is going to be important. There's a lot of things we don't know yet. The report describes the various initiatives underway in a very clear and comprehensive way, I think. I want to pick up on a couple of things. You listed the various projects that we're doing, and you also talk about the network that we have with large Swedish companies, the Swedish Leadership for Sustainable Development. I think an additional advantage of this network that could be underscored, and that relates to your point, is really the collaboration between the companies. In the network, companies from different sectors are included. They're private and public partners. And working together around concrete projects, sharing experiences and knowledge, I think really helps to promote sustainable development, and that this platform could be a model that can be used in other countries and other settings. Because that's another important thing in this area. How can we scale up these initiatives and these partnerships? Another area that I think could be more clearly distinguished in the report is really looking at business at different levels. You talk a lot about multinationals and large Swedish companies and FDIs. But when you think where the jobs are really going to come, it's from local industry and from local a local private sector. They're gonna stand for something like 90% of job creation in our partner countries. So looking at how we work together with local companies and promote local companies and help them get off the ground, I think is going to be really important going forward. And also in difficult environments, also in conflict and post-conflict countries. And here we have some examples. We have, for example, a guarantee in Palestine that's been showing results and for job creation and small and SMEs creation. The role of civil society is important. We haven't talked so much about that. And in parallel to developing the partnerships with the private sector, CEDA also, of course, has a relationship with civil society and has from the start contributed to initiatives that will ensure accountability and transparency in working with the private sector, such as Swedwatch and the global reporting initiatives. Finally, you started off, Ari, saying that you've excluded infrastructure from the report and the review. One reason that there's a lot of experience. I still think that infrastructure is an area that we have to come back to and think about. We know that the infrastructure gap is large, in particular in sub-Saharan Africa, and that it's really an impediment to development and inclusive development. And here I think we have to think about new ways for why aren't these investments taking place. There are a lot of capital around the world. We have pension companies, national and private, that are looking for investments and they're looking for rate of returns in this zero rate world. Here at CEDA, together with other with the OECD and the World Economic Forum and other donors, we've started to think about that and formed a partnership, the Sustainable Development Investment Partnership, to create a platform to really having a meeting place where different actors can work together and find practical solutions and concrete solutions to get infrastructure projects off the ground. So I think there's more needed than just the PPPs that are currently underway. My final point, and this is something you don't talk so much about in the report, is that the most important thing long term for sustainable development is going to be domestic resource mobilizations in the countries. That is going to be the long term financing. So we need to work, of course, to strength institutions, capacity, and an enabling environment. But I also think this is an area where business has a role to play. We know that illicit flows are large today. We know that companies are not paying taxes in our partner countries. I think we need to engage in the private sector around in a discussion around these issues and think about ways of how we can create an environment where business actually pays taxes and contributes to the development in countries. Thank you.
Thank you, Annika.